Did you hear the good news? Your electricity bills might be about to drop. Unfortunately, you won't see as big a drop as our neighbours to the north in Queensland, but I think we can all agree any drop is good. And it raises a bigger question about how you power your home with solar panels, perhaps adorning your roof, maybe a solar battery against one of your walls in your house. So what's the future of electricity? Dr. Bonnie McBain is from the University of Newcastle School of Environmental and Life Sciences. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Is now a time of big change for our electricity sector, do you think?
I think so. There's been a lot of changes lately. There's changes in technology, changes in how jurisdictions have policy. So I've been in this game for a very long time and it's been mostly depressing, but at the moment it's actually really, really exciting.
Yeah, why do you say that? What are you most excited about right now when we look electricity in Australia?
Look, I think this is the first time that a lot of renewable technologies have become more affordable than traditional fossil fuel-based initiatives. So that is probably the biggest barrier that we've faced for the last 20, 30 years. And that automatically means that people can access that much more easily, either as individual households or as big companies actually changing the structure of the electricity network itself.
Is that being driven by consumers?
I think it's a combination of things. It's certainly something about the economies of scale. So one of the things that we had in New South Wales was subsidised solar power for households for a long time. And that policy was so successful, the actual price of solar panels reduced so much that people could actually not need the subsidies to get a financial benefit from investing in solar on their roofs because the turnaround period was much smaller where you paid off your solar panels. So that's like a mini example of what happened in New South Wales. And that's happening all over the world too as different companies are able to upscale their production of the renewable technology so they get cheaper over time.
Yeah.
So at the moment, at a sort of a national scale, it's cheaper to install solar power and to some extent wind, depending on where you are, than it is to build a new coal-fired power station. And so you see the private sector actually taking big leaps and bounds in transforming our national electricity grid, where there's huge increases relative to what there has been in the past for renewable technology that is just becoming mainstream now. The problem that we're facing is twofold. The electricity grid itself, which is actually built around very stable coal-fired power stations, that now needs to be more dynamic because renewable electricity is produced, for example, when it's the sun shines and when it's windy. And so some renewables technology are really reliant on the weather conditions at a point in time. So that includes those ones that are becoming very affordable. The challenge with the grid is that it's got to be able to accept large amounts of electricity when the conditions are right and then store it if that electricity is not needed at the moment. And there's been leaps and bounds in that as well. So the battery system set up in South Australia is a really good example where it has already been able to save the grid from collapsing despite the fact that it's got a really high load of renewable technologies embedded in that grid. So those sorts of technologies are changing equally as fast as the actual energy producing technologies as well. So that's also, for me, really exciting.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, solar panels felt like a big thing, as you were saying, and then they became quite common. And then the next thing, you know, at home was to have the batteries, and that felt like a really big thing and quite unaffordable. But now more and more people are not feeding their solar back into the grid but storing it themselves.
Correct, yeah, and that really helps. If individual households have got battery systems like that, that means that it's helping the grid, which is not adapted to that sort of transition into new technologies. And there's lots of different ideas for doing that sort of thing. So changing what happens at a household level, there's lots of potential there to be able to really increase the renewables on in the grid as a whole, and then use those storage technologies at a smaller scale to be able to mitigate this variability in renewable energy production. So household solar batteries, that's a really great way of doing that, because you're not necessarily feeding energy into the grid when there is demand.
Yeah.
So that's one great way. Another way, which is really outside of the box, is electric vehicles.
Yeah.
So there's some modelling currently underway at the University of Sydney, and it's looking at how electric vehicles can be actually a pseudo-type battery storage system.
Really?
That can actually complement what's happening in a transition in the electricity grid. So here's an example. If you've got an electric car and it's got a fairly large size battery that allows you maybe to travel to Sydney and back,
yeah.
But most of the trips you do is literally like 10 minutes to work and then back again. So basically the car's just sitting in the car park with a battery. If, for instance, you've got some way of linking that car to the grid, and getting the battery topped up whilst you're at work and you're not using the car, then you could drive that car home, and then knowing tomorrow that you're only going to drive to work and it's going to take you 10 minutes, you can use that as a battery to then supplement into the grid, because during the night time, that's when most of our like household demand happens, but that's when the sun isn't shining. So there's lots of little ways like that that we can start thinking about changing our behaviour or changing how we automate things, and that will really help the grid as a whole. So we have to really think at lots of different scales on how this can happen. The other example in South Australia is that they're using the power that's generated from a large fraction of their renewables grid, and then asking households to change their behaviour and automating that so we don't have to think about it. So if, for example, you're running a pool pump, you run that during the day when you've essentially got free energy, and you do a lot of those other sort of background activities during the time when the renewables energy is actually being produced, rather than doing that when you get home. So, for instance, you could set your washing machine on a timer so that it runs during the day, and when you get home, that's when you put your washing out rather than the other way around.
Yeah, because when you said earlier that we need to make our, you know, national electricity grid more dynamic, straight away I just see dollar signs. So these little ways are ways to maybe not have to invest so much into that national grid if we're doing little things within our neighbourhoods or our own houses or communities, right?
Exactly, and that gives our grid resilience, and it also makes financial sense. So a lot of the stuff that I've been talking about can actually be done via smart metering, and that means we don't have to do any of the thinking ourselves.
So we love that.
For me, yeah, me too.
We're too busy. There's too many other things in our head to worry about, like who's charging the car or whatever.
Yeah, and it's actually a really big barrier, because changing our behaviour in a conscious sense and having actually to do lots of different things requires a lot of mental energy, and it's hugely responsible for things not changing when they need to change. And so if we can actually do that mental calculation and hand it over to something that's automated, then that means that barrier of behavioural change is not really a barrier anymore.
Yeah.
We have lots of other ways that we need to change our behaviour so that we become more sustainable. But the more we can automate the things that can be automated, the less effort that transition is going to be, and the more successful and reliable it's going to be. And when you talk about electricity grids, the reliability of power is a really critical thing. Because that's what we're used to. Mm. We're used to really reliable electricity. But then we also, on a bigger picture, rely on that for really important things. such as our hospital network and all that sort of stuff. So we have these multiple levels on which we can act and change how the system operates, then it's not so much effort on our part.
How do you think this change is driven? Is it by community champions, someone, you know, in an individual street in different suburbs who, you know, are into this and show that it's easy to be done and through word of mouth get other people on board?
Yeah, I think that's how change happens. So usually change is where lots of people, lots of individual people do things slightly differently and then they tell their friends, because we're very driven by social norms and what our friends think, what our colleagues think. So, yes, that's a really important part of change. And the early adopters are always the easy people to convince because they're already motivated in that way. It's usually once you've got all the early adopters doing things differently, the next challenge is actually to mainstream a lot of these things. And so having conversations with your friends about how you're doing things differently is very empowering, especially if you're having conversations with people that are not the sort of people that take on these change all the time. And it's a much easier conversation these days because it makes financial sense.
I was about to say, you say, I saved X amount of dollars on my electricity, people are like, tell me more.
Yeah, exactly. So often you can have conversations with people saying, I haven't had an electricity bill for however many years, and it's a really attractive conversation to be having. And I think there's lots and lots of examples of how these small-scale changes are occurring, and people are just now starting to see the mainstreaming of that. So the early adoption happened probably a decade ago. Now we're starting to see the mainstreaming of a lot of these things. I saw on the news the other day there's a small community in Victoria who's just now gone 100% solar. So they've got this amazing autonomy that they've got for themselves because they're surrounded by increasing electricity prices. But on another level, they have a new way of marketing themselves as well because the whole entire country town is green. And they've also got, once they've paid off their solar infrastructure, they literally will be able to divert all of that money that they used to divert to electricity bills to other things to make their town a better place. So just this small change in financial benefit or financial achievability means that all these other flow-on effects can happen. And so in the end, to be green is actually positive on a number of different levels, not just the fact that you've got no bill.
Yeah.
And that for me is really exciting.
Bonnie, always really great to chat with you. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Pleasure. Thanks, Kai.
Dr. Bonnie McBain there from the University of Newcastle School of Environmental and Life Sciences, talking there about what the future could look like for your electricity, for your bill, for how you power your house.